Hey everyone, welcome back to the Tales of Two Cities podcast, radio stories from Oakland and Richmond. I'm Matt Beagle, and I'm your one-man band this week, playing host and producer because everyone else is out on spring break. But we have some great stories for you today. Today's episode is all about change, people and places going through powerful transformations. We have a story on the ever-shifting cannabis industry in Oakland and the promise of big money as the legal framework regulating it shifts.
I've seen probably four or five people in the last month and a half have approached me to tell me that they are starting venture capital firms with the explicit intent of investing in cannabis.
And the story of an Oakland business that suddenly had to change its name when international events conspired against it.
We've dealt with some backlash even now that you shouldn't change your name, you shouldn't give in, you're letting the terrorists win.
And we report live from Hood Slam, Oakland's pro wrestling event, which turns gender stereotypes and actual people on their heads. That's all coming up right now on the Tales of Two Cities podcast. Our first story today is from Naila Morgan, who's been doing some great reporting on the cannabis industry for Oakland North. Her story focuses on two people. One is the head of a Silicon Valley-type incubator for pot startups. The other is a former street dealer, trying to break his way into the legal and lucrative side of the industry. His name? Dankman, an alias he gave for the story. Remember, it's legal in California to sell pot through a dispensary to a person with a prescription from a doctor, but illegal to sell on the street for recreational use. And federally, it's still illegal to sell pot for any reason. Oakland is becoming a hub for cannabis-related business, and Naila's story sheds light on what people are doing to position themselves for a big profit.
Last year, Oakland became home to Gateway, California's first marijuana business incubator.
Well, so at Gateway, we're an incubator for cannabis-related startups. So we're bringing the successful accelerator slash incubator model from Silicon Valley and bringing it into the cannabis industry.
Gateway founder Carter Lauren was once part of the team that created the technology for Blu-ray discs and has spent over 10 years advising technology startups.
Look at tech IPOs. They've been kind of crappy, right? They've been flat. I think investors are starting to look for other places to deploy capital, and founders are starting to look outside of the standard model of, I just build an app. A lot of what we've been used to in tech has become pretty saturated. I've seen probably four or five people in the last month and a half have approached me to tell me that they are starting venture capital firms with the explicit intent of investing in cannabis. So I think as the money comes in, you'll start to see more tech people come in.
But what about the people who've already been involved in the industry? Meet Dankman. He's been working in the underground marijuana industry for 5 years and is now ready to launch a legal dispensary business. His voice has been distorted to protect his identity.
You know, it started delivery service. It was just like I was just looking for a way to just elevate what I'm doing because I've been doing this for a while. And it's like I feel like being like a street level dealer, it's like you're almost like a slave to money. You know, when I first started, first off, I would deliver. That was like my gimmick, you know? So it was like I realized it was real saturated out here, so I would tell everybody I would deliver to them. Maybe I'd make $10 in a day and just be juiced, you know, like real hyped. But nowadays, maybe I'll make, you know, anywhere from 200 to 500 in a day, you know?
The legal cannabis industry may be taking off, but the underground community is getting left in the dust. Lauren believes the friction comes from the differing professional backgrounds both groups bring to the ecosystem.
I think the skill sets that make someone a good street dealer back in the day aren't the same skill sets that make someone good at selling a legitimate product. So you don't just take the same skill set that you've been using and then suddenly go legal and everything works out. You might not be used to dealing with HR. You might not be used to dealing with contracts and marketing and You know, all these things that, you know, you do much differently when you're underground.
So I would think you just need to start a collective. That's like the main thing to do, start a collective. And maybe get a sales license, you know, maybe from like City Hall or something. And I think that's pretty much like the basics you need to be doing this. So first step, get the name. Next step, get the collective. And then start doing this.
Over the past year, Dankman has been attending industry events and exploring his options of either joining a business incubator like Gateway or starting from scratch. He hopes to transition to the legal marijuana industry very soon. This is Naila Morgan reporting for the Tales of Two Cities podcast.
I reported this next story about an Oakland business that suddenly had to change its name because of events way beyond the owner's control. Imagine you open the business of your dreams in your hometown, and it becomes a beloved local institution. And then suddenly, through no fault of your own, the name that you chose becomes associated with something bad. Like, really bad. Maybe even evil. That's exactly what happened to Dr. Noha Abolata.
I was born and raised in Oakland. I went off to medical school.
When she finished her residency, Noha moved back to Oakland and opened a skin treatment clinic to provide affordable services for all skin tones. Talking with Noha at her clinic, it's clear she really put a lot of thought into its name.
And so when you think about ancient Egyptian culture, there was a certain premium put on looking and feeling your best.
She chose something meaningful, and business was great. For 10 years, Noha says they served a loyal and diverse clientele. Then, a year or two ago, the name took on a completely new meaning.
It was probably around the time of the Paris attacks when I think people really started to put pressure, in the sense that we were getting phone calls from people that were quite negative. It was interesting because we had clients that were saying, "Don't change your name. You can't change your name. We love ISIS."
Yeah. Noha named her clinic after the Egyptian goddess of health, beauty, and fertility, Isis.
We kept hoping, okay, somehow, you know, the ISIL proponents are going to win, or the IS, or all the different names.
People were calling in really upset, even threatening the staff over the phone. She put up a sign outside and on their website saying they were changing their name for, quote, obvious reasons. But not everyone liked that idea.
We've dealt with some backlash even now that you shouldn't change your name, you shouldn't give in, you're letting the terrorists win.
Noha settled on a new name, Elysium, the ancient Egyptian word for paradise. She still worries it could be co-opted.
And so, of course, we thought, oh my God, what if, you know, there's another group named, you know, Elysium?
Now she has to change her business cards, brochures, website, file new tax forms. Noha says that things pop up that she never would have thought of.
You know, we're calling people to make confirmation calls for appointments the next day and realizing that our caller ID still says ISIS. And so we have to call the phone company.
Are people freaked out when they pick up the phone?
ISIS is calling me. What's going on?
She's ordered a new sign. But until it arrives, the old one still says ISIS in big purple letters above her shop on Broadway.
I think they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard spot. It's not their fault that the world has changed to where some people may look at it in a negative way.
I don't understand why they was changing it.
Uh-huh. Had you not heard of the group ISIS in the Middle East before?
No.
So you learned about it through that?
Yes. Oh.
Are you just making the connection right now?
Yes. Okay, because I thought it was like a goddess name.
Noha says picking a new name is almost like starting from scratch. She's still getting used to it. Every time she says the new name, Elysium, she tacks on,
formerly Isis Skin and Body.
I ask when she'll let Isis go.
That's a great question. I don't know the answer yet. Maybe never. I mean, there's a chance that, you know, at least on our website, we'll always sort of pay a tribute to Isis and what she symbolized.
For Northgate Radio, I'm Matt Beagle.
Noha isn't alone. There are 5 other Alameda County businesses that share the name. Also, remember the dog on Downton Abbey named Isis that mysteriously disappeared from the show? That story originally aired on Northgate Radio, a weekly live show produced by the Berklee Graduate School of Journalism. You can listen to that show every Thursday, except tomorrow, spring break, from 9 a.m. to 9:30 on KALX 90.7 FM. Our final story today is from Teresa Katsourilis, who reported from the uniquely Oakland event, Hood Slam. Hood Slam takes wrestling and changes the game, especially when it comes to gender. This story also first aired for Northgate Radio on KALX. Here's Teresa.
Can you describe what you're wearing?
I got a nice necklace on. I'll have a blonde wig, curly wig, and then bright red lipstick. And I'm going to be known as Wanda. Hi. Hey, girlfriend. How you doing?
It's good. Are you going to talk like that in the ring?
Ooh, girlfriend, you know it.
It's Friday night in Oakland, and pro wrestler Chupacabra, real name Taylor Correa, is fighting in a white dress and heels. It's two against one, and he's on the ropes. The fight's emceed by a ripped, veiny wrestler dressed in a bonnet and tutu. He pours shots of whiskey for the audience, and they pass the wrestler's joints between rounds. This is Hood Slam, a monthly independent wrestling show held at the Oakland Metro Opera House. Kids aren't allowed, and anything goes.
And Dorothy knows that she is not in Kansas anymore. You're in Oakland, bro.
And this is the second year they've held their Femmed Out show, the only wrestling show in the nation performed in drag. Backstage before the show, Hood Slam's founder reads the fight schedule for the evening. The wrestlers hash out who's going to win each fight, then maybe run through a few moves. Two dozen men and women are applying makeup and bras and tights. The Stoner Brothers, a pair of 350-pound twins who fight as a team, are each dressed as a giant boob. They body check the Chupacabra as they walk by.
Wow!
This is so impressive. That is a huge boob. Yeah, no, I mean, it was incredibly, I mean, you were basically just attacked by a boob.
The Chupacabra is Taylor Correa's most famous character. He's been a professional wrestler for 13 years, and Hood Slam is one of his favorite events.
To me, it's been really good because I've been able to become more of an actor and an entertainer and be a wrestler still at the same time.
Fans love wrestling because it's shameless. The sport's campy and kitschy and violent, like Fight Club meets Days of Our Lives. And it can also be big business. The Worldwide Wrestling Entertainment Network, or WWE, reports a weekly audience of 15 million viewers, and there are dozens of independent wrestling companies across the country. But pro wrestling is also known for its over-the-top machismo. The sport's approach to gender roles can be stereotypical at best, and it's not always clear if the jokes are made in good faith.
You know, we're talking about that ugly side of America. Its deep underbelly has been reflected in the mirror that is wrestling.
That's Hood Slam's founder, Sam Khandagabadi. Wrestling fans may know him as the Dark Sheik, and he performs in drag both in and outside of the ring.
After the show, a friend of mine who's transgendered was like, I'm really happy that, you know, you weren't on the microphone making like drag jokes or trans jokes. No, why would we do that?
He created Hood Slam as a safe space for fighters to be as outrageous as they want to be. Drag Night is a part of that, and other wrestling shows should take note. While pro wrestling's national audience has declined over the past 10 years, Hood Slam keeps selling out.
It's very inclusive. We make room for everyone. It doesn't exclude anybody.
For the Chupacabra and other wrestlers at Hood Slam, Femmed Out can be liberating, not to mention fun for the whole family. He bought his drag outfit with his wife and three kids, who picked out his dress and heels by unanimous vote.
Right when we were about to check out and stuff, it was funny because an older lady came by and saw my daughter carrying the dress and was like, oh, that's a beautiful dress there. Is that for you? No, it's for my dad. The lady had this confused look on her face while my daughter was sitting there smiling ear to ear. I want them to understand it doesn't matter if you're male or female. You can be confident who you are. And they're like, okay, dad's not afraid to do it. You don't have to be afraid of it too.
I'm not afraid to be Teresa Katsourilis, and this is Northgate Radio.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of The Tales of Two Cities. Our program was a little Oakland-heavy this week, but we'll be back with more great radio stories focusing on Richmond. You can find our episodes on oaklandnorth.net, richmondconfidential.org, and on SoundCloud. Also, tune in to Northgate Radio on Thursday mornings, 9 a.m. to 9:30 on KALX 90.7 FM. Our music is by Kevin McLeod, and I'm Matt Beagle, your host and producer. See you next time.